This is the podcast for Woodland Presbyterian Church in Memphis, Tennessee. We are maturing God's people to serve a hurting world. We hope you enjoy the message. And if you'd like to learn more about our church, look us up at woodlandpres.org. Thanks so much. May the Lord bless you.
I was in seminary when I taught this book a few years ago, so I had to make use of that. And so I asked my Old Testament professor what I needed to be aware of when I taught this book. His answer is still one of my favorites. Lay off, Naomi. How much more can a woman lose before people give her a break? He'd heard a lot of sermons that attacked this widow. Pastor's trying to figure out what sin she committed that God would allow her to endure such hardship. Because we desperately want to believe, even pastors, that if we make the right choices, it's not going to necessarily happen to you. It's possible to avoid this kind of pain if we just do the right things. But that's just not how it goes down here, is it? Sometimes suffering isn't because of a particular sin or a pattern of sin in our lives. Sometimes it's because the world is under the power of sin. The way the world isn't how God created the world. It's how our sin corrupted the goodness that God created. All things are still under his sovereign power, but we can admit this isn't how it should be. There's a reason John begins his gospel describing Christ as a light in a darkness that cannot be overcome. This fallen world can be very, very dark, can't it? The book of Ruth begins with a simple phrase that we usually ignore when we walk through it. In the days that the judges ruled. But that little phrase says a whole lot about the days when Ruth and Naomi lived. The book of Judges tells the tragic story of how God's people began doing what's right in their own eyes, just one generation after Joshua and Caleb. They ignore all those laws that God so graciously gave them to help them live according to God's standards, to live under his blessing. We beg God for wisdom, but they had it and rejected it. The price for that kind of corporate disobedience is higher than anybody wants to pay. God's people are on a downward spiral, going through phases of war and defeat, interrupted by gracious little glimpses of peace and prosperity, only for them to return to their sin and start the whole thing over again. We find over and over again in the book of Judges, it's the women who pay the price. Women are ignored, kidnapped, mutilated, and murdered. It's stellar. All in the promised land. A daughter is sacrificed on the altar of her father's ego. A priest has a concubine, which priests aren't supposed to have, and he sacrifices her to the worst of humanity in order to save himself. Maybe not a keeper, right? It's not a happy time to be a woman in the days that the judges ruled. But though the judges ruled, God still reigned. He was still working out his redemption plan, even in those dark days. And this book gives us a glimpse of what he's up to. Sin still has consequences. And very often, it's the most vulnerable who pay for the price of society's disobedience. The women, the children, most especially widows. So the book of Ruth enters into those dark days by featuring two widows through whom light would one day come. Naomi went to Moab with her husband and two sons to flee a famine. The name Bethlehem means house of bread. But there was no bread in the house of bread. The writer clues us in. This is not how it should be. Naomi, her husband, and sons left God's promised land to go to the ungodly nation of Moab. This is one of those areas where some pastors and even theologians believe she and her family are sinning by leaving God's covenant for food. That's not indicated anywhere that I can find, and it's certainly not the point of the book. But what matters most is that Naomi gains two daughters-in-law. But in the land they fled to for safety, she loses her husband and two sons. This is not how it should be. This kind of loss changes a person, doesn't it? Many people in this room have experienced that kind of life-altering loss, Grief is the right response to the suffering that Naomi endures here. Grief isn't always reasonable. Grieving people very often don't feel how they should feel or think what they should think. But that's not sin. It's part of the healthy process of trying to make sense out of nonsense, trying to reconcile a good and powerful God with a world that is not as it should be. Naomi left Bethlehem in a famine, believing she and her family would be filled in Moab. But that's not how it went. In her grief, she reasons that it's God's own hand that's against her. It's not true. But from her perspective, how can we blame her for reaching the wrong conclusion? She's still in the middle of things, not at the end looking back, and certainly not over them, surveying how everything works out. She's trudging it out in the middle, and she's the one everyone's looking to for answers. I know that some of you have been there. The loss is overwhelming, the future terrifying and unclear, and then people ask you questions, well-meaning questions. What do you need? How can I help? What food do you like? And they come over. They come over, right? And now you're playing host when all you want to do is watch mediocre Hallmark Christmas movies in your sweats and nurse your own broken heart with cake for dinner, right? Maybe you're there right now. I mean, the dudes may not have followed all that. That's okay. But maybe you're there right now. When every well-intentioned question feels like a test in a language that you don't know. Holidays aren't fun for everyone. For some, it's a season of grief, the deepest, loneliest grief. Oh, but God sees, dear one. He sees the emptiness that feels all the emptier because of how full it once was. Fullness you couldn't appreciate at the time, but who could in the middle of things? Oh, but God sees. He sees the emptiness. He sees the guilt. He sits with you in the dark, and he doesn't condemn you for wrong theology spoken in moments of overwhelming grief. He doesn't sift through confusion to find whether your assessments are right or wrong. He's just near, even when it doesn't feel like he's near. The God who wrote Naomi's story is writing yours, even now. And it matters to him and to me and to so many others. He is with us when things are not how they should be. So take time to let yourself consider. Is there anywhere that I'm experiencing emptiness that I've been afraid to express to God? He can take it. He already knows. Give yourself time to mourn the losses without the guilt of, I shouldn't think that. Lament before God is an act of faith, not sin, because it testifies to our own souls that God cares and he hears when we speak. God didn't leave Naomi in her grief. He moved toward her in the middle of it. His blessing came from a very unexpected place. Mothers and daughters-in-law have an infamous history, don't we? Moms don't usually like the women who steal their precious little boys away from them. Women who have the audacity to be more beloved to their own sons than their mothers are. The nerve. Mother is supposed to be his first love. Then this cute little thing comes and steals the heart she spent years winning over with dinners and laundry and birthday gifts and birthday parties. Oh my gosh, the birthday parties. And protective gasps over every tiny little threat and keeping Dad from losing his temper when he has the audacity to scratch the car or whatever it is they drove back then. So what kind of mother-in-law must Naomi be to elicit this kind of affection and commitment from her two daughters-in-law? These aren't even Israelite women. They're Moabites with different customs and probably very different, possibly questionable family recipes. How patient must she have been to enter a country that wasn't her own, take in daughters from a people that were not her own, and to win over their hearts as much as her sons did? What kind of a mother-in-law is that? They love Naomi, and Naomi loves them even enough to give them up when they're all she has. Maybe the pressure of being all that they would have feels too heavy to carry in her grief. Naomi doesn't think she has anything to offer them. Look at verses 12 and 13 again if you have your Bible open. "Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. For it is exceedingly bitter to me, for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." At the time, there weren't a ton of options for widowed, childless women. And the custom in Israel was for widowed daughters-in-law to marry the next son of their mother-in-law. But that's almost impossible because Naomi doesn't have any other children. She doesn't even have suitors to potentially marry and then have children. She pleads with Orpah and Ruth, "Just return home. Let me carry this on my own." And Orpah eventually acquiesces, but Ruth just plain refuses, knowing she will never return to her home if she goes with Naomi, never see her parents again, never have that casserole that mom makes every holiday. Instead, she makes one of the most powerful vows in all of human literature. "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." I don't know if I'd ask my husband to make that kind of commitment. "Hey, boo, if I die here, I expect you to stay there. Your plot will be right next to mine, so help me. You promise? Okay, good." That's more than "until death do us part." That's like "even death can't part us." That's a stubborn love. It's a gritty love. A love that Naomi can't argue against. She surrenders and the two widows soldier on to a home Naomi hasn't seen in 10 years and Ruth has never seen. A lot of people call this book a love story, and it is. But it's more new Disney than old Disney. It's more Frozen than Cinderella. This isn't primarily a love story about Ruth and the man she meets in the field. Romantic love, which we'll consider next week. The greatest love in this story is that of a young woman who chooses to love her mother-in-law when they're both at their lowest. Isn't that the kind of love we need? Ruth didn't know much about Naomi's God or her people, but she committed herself to them because she loved Naomi. She was willing to jump into this commitment, largely blind of the consequences it may demand. And within a year, Naomi could possibly die and leave Ruth alone in Bethlehem. Naomi isn't immortal, so Ruth's commitment is a righteous risk. That's a kind of love that can transform a person as much as any loss. Someone who just sticks with you. It's the kind of love we celebrate on Christmas, a love that's committed to us in our lowest moments, that sees a pleasant future when the present is bitter, that takes us on with all of our baggage, empty though our suitcases may be. The whole town is abuzz when Naomi and Ruth arrive. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women said, "Is this Naomi?" Naomi was anything but forgotten, but the loss was so transformative. Her presence without the men she left with so unexpected, old friends barely recognize her. When they gather to meet her and Ruth, Naomi can only see her loss. Who can blame her? Being back in familiar territory often serves as a reminder of all the things that are not how they should be. Sometimes, our greatest grief isn't what we've lost, but the dreams that went unfulfilled. We can miss the unexpected gifts God gives when we're focused on what He didn't give us. We have to choose to notice God's blessing, especially when our loss feels heavy. So as you're decorating and preparing and cooking this week, getting ready for Christmas, take a moment and ask, how have I experienced God's stubborn love for me that I may have overlooked in my grief or disappointment? Consciously consider what God has done for you that you may have neglected to notice and thank Him for. Lament allows us to experience our losses honestly with God, and gratitude enables us to enjoy His gifts even in grief. We can and we should do both. Ruth and Naomi's story is far from over. And God has already been very gracious to Naomi through the gift of Ruth's love. This is a story about love that is better than it ought to be when things are not as they should be. And that's the same kind of story we tell every year at Christmas. The story of God's love for us when we were far from what we were created to be, and how He entered the story to fill what was empty and to shine light into our darkness by taking on human flesh through His Son. Advent is a season when we wait with God's people through all of time and space for redemption that can only come through Jesus Christ, the Son of God. It's a season when we recognize the darkness that surrounds us, and we look for the light that refuses, just refuses to be overcome by it. Advent invites us into the love of God that surpasses all understanding. His love is so much better than we deserve, and it's everything that we need. The story that begins with famine has already reached the barley harvest by the end of chapter 1. Ruth's love is remarkable, but it isn't enough to save anyone. Ruth's love points to a greater love, that God is for His people, love that sees us and guides human history to its proper end, which is total redemption through Jesus Christ. When things aren't how they should be, God sends His love that's better than it ought to be. Like Ruth, you and I have the privilege to be instruments of God's love for others when they need it the most. And that calls us to show that kind of love to others. So we ask this time of year, who needs a glimpse of God's love that could only be perfectly expressed through the Son of God? We have food drives and angel trees that invite us into God's redemptive mission on earth as it is in heaven. Healing which should be, which should not be, through the love that's better than it ought to be. How is God calling you into that work this season? Loving others is the right response to the love we've received. And as Christians, we celebrate one thing, one person this time of year, the one who redeemed us at the cost of His own life. We can and should admit, this isn't how it should be. But God also commands us, calls us to remember the love that He demonstrates for us through Jesus Christ, love that's better than it ever ought to be. What kind of God sees the mess that we made, the harm we've caused, the suffering we initiated, and reaches down into it to heal it? What kind of God, enjoying the privilege of His Godship, leaves His undisturbed glory, His court, His home, to take on flesh in the womb of a girl He created? Every hair on her head counted. To love a world that was broken through our own rebellion, that He could redeem it from the darkness. What kind of God empties Himself of His glory, His rightful glory, to take on the weakness of our helpless estate? What kind of God says, not even death can separate you from my love? Our God, incarnate in Jesus Christ, is a God who is better than He ought to be, because He is God with us. Let's pray.
Thank you for listening to this message from Woodland Presbyterian Church. maturing God's people to serve a hurting world. If you would like to learn more about our congregation, please visit us at woodlandpres.org. God bless you today.